Recording started.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Schirler. The show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And these times are subject to change. You can also listen to our show on Podomatic, Spotify, Amazon, and a whole bunch of other platforms. It is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp will be held from July 17 to the 22nd at the beautiful Singing Hills Christian Camp in Plainfield, New Hampshire, which is an hour north and west of the state capital. We also have a ladies' retreat coming up at the same venue, late April into early May, Friday, I think it's April 30th to May 2nd. And we have a family retreat, a weekend retreat, not too far from me in Camp Sentinel in Tuftonboro, New Hampshire, last day in September and first 2 days in October. And you can get more information by visiting our website, campconstitution.net. Now, folks, we were down at the Supreme Court. We had a rally. We had a prayer vigil in the evening, January 17th, Monday, and then we had a rally, and there were a lot of wonderful people that spoke at the rally, different organizations, of course, some of our people, and one of them is with us today, Annabelle Rutledge. Annabelle, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well, and I'm so grateful to be here with you today.
Well, I'm very grateful that you showed up at the rally with some of your ladies with your signs, and you spoke. And I'm trying to get the video. There was a video made of the rally by Liberty Council, and it's on their Facebook page. I was trying to copy and paste it, but I'm having trouble downloading it. But you were one of the many speakers at that rally, and it was a cold. It wasn't snowing or raining, but it was pretty cold out. So, but I was very glad you were there, and we're very optimistic that our case will come in our favor. So I have a little biographical sketch, but I think I'll let you give us a biographical sketch instead of reading it here from the website.
Yeah, as you said, my name is Annabelle Rutledge, and I am the National Director of Young Women for America, which is a project of a bigger organization called Concerned Women for America. So we are actually the nation's largest public policy women's organization in the country. We are grassroots, meaning that we have volunteers all across the country. They amaze us. They amaze me, who advocate for our issues. We work 7 issues, including sanctity of life, defense of the family, national sovereignty. And the reason how that we were outside standing with you is because one of our 7 core issues is religious liberty. And of course, what you guys are dealing with is a clear religious liberty issue. And so we at CWA, we've been working for more than 40 years on these 7 core issues here in the nation's capital, but then we have 500,000 women across the country. And men, we like to say we're the women's organization that loves men, who advocate for these same issues in their own communities and at the local level, at their state legislatures. So what I get to do at CWA is I work with a specific subset of our grassroots, which is young women. So women 16 to 26, we have high school, college, and into young professionals, again, advocating for these same issues, for biblical principles and conservative values in our public policy, which is, of course, what our nation was founded on. We're trying to preserve the same principles that our nation was founded on. So that is kind of what our organization and what I do at our organization, and the reason that we were standing in solidarity with you, and not just with you, but on behalf of not even just Christians across this country, but just people of faith. And we're happy to do that, and so glad to meet you there.
Well, yeah, Liberty Council, of course, is the organization that our legal team, and they do an incredible work. It must be a little tough to live in. Do you live right in D.C.?
So thankfully, I do not live in the district. I live across the river in the free state of Virginia, if we can keep it that way. It's a little bit easier to live on this side of the river.
Well, I live in New Hampshire. I lived in Massachusetts, most of my life, except the times I was in the military. And we've been here a little over a year now, and it's just such a far cry. And I could see how Virginia, thanks to the new governor and the fact that the
Yeah.
Republicans captured, I think, both the House and Senate. What do they call it? They don't call it the House. They call it something else.
The House
In
of Delegates, is that correct?
yeah,
I should
delegates.
know
Yeah,
better.
yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a friend of Bob, Delegate Bob Marshall. He's a former delegate. Do you know him? He
Okay.
was one of the
I do
pioneers in the
not.
Right
I'm
to
not.
Life movement. Yeah,
Okay.
he's still active, I think. I haven't seen him in a couple of years, but he was the one that he's the one that worked on the Hyde Amendment. He was the man behind the Hyde
Yes.
Amendment.
Okay.
And he wonderful guy, and devout Christian man. So no, the CWA, your organization goes back to the early 70s, founded by Beverly LaHaye, I believe, right?
Yeah, so late 70s, we were founded in 79, but yes, you're correct. By Mrs. Beverly LaHaye was the founder of our organization. And at that time, there was not an answer to the feminist movement that was taking off. You had Betty Friedan standing on
Oh, yeah.
television saying that she spoke for all women. And it was really that line when she was advocating for, just sex without consequences, and having abortions on demand, and then simultaneously saying that she was the voice for women across this nation. I think that Christian women often are faced with this idea that all women are kind of monolithic in our thinking, right? And the left has kind of dominated this narrative that they own the rights to what women believe. And Mrs. Beverly LaHaye, to her credit, sat there and thought, well, she surely doesn't speak for me, nor does she speak for any of my friends or anyone that I go to church with. And it was out of that realization, looking around, that there was no one else standing for a different way of thinking as women, that Concerned Women for America was founded at that time.
And your subdivision is a little it, not as old as the organization, dealing with specifically high school, college, and young professional or young ladies up to about 26 or so, correct? That's a newer project.
Yeah, it is newer. It is a newer project, not so new, but it is definitely newer than our organization's age. So Penny Nance, who is our current president and CEO, when she came on, she really saw, we have all these amazing volunteers across the country, but then she saw this need to start tapping into bringing in the next generation. What happens when all of the leaders at that time move on, and some of them start having families, or when they become grandparents, maybe they want to take a step back. Although we do have some amazing grandmas
Or
who
pass
are still
away,
volunteers and work with
or
us,
pass away as
or
people.
pass away. I mean,
Yeah.
and we're getting to that point, we've been around long enough, that look to the next generation. And to her credit, she really took that on. And so Young Women for America has been around for 11 years now. And we have leaders across the country. I think right now, it fluctuates given the nature of who we're working with as they move in and out of school and take on different positions or start a job and move on in their own way. We have turnover ourselves, but we've seen a lot of growth with, I believe we're in 37 states right now and Puerto Rico. So those are states where we specifically have leaders carrying the torch. So it's very exciting. And honestly, I have the privilege and honor of being the national director of the program, but in so many ways, I am deeply inspired by these young girls in the program who, at the age of 16 years old or 18 years old or 21, they're really on the front lines of a lot of the battles that we're seeing going on. Even just talking about the issue of life again and abortion on their college campuses, we've seen a huge push for chemical abortions on campuses. There's a lot of workings between Planned Parenthood with state schools, and they're really having to sit in that line of fire and stand up for what they believe in. We've had girls who have, had their grades docked because of their beliefs. Of course, they're deeply caught up in the fight for protecting Title IX and what it means to be a female. So
Right.
I, have this
Oh, can you
title, but
explain?
really
Can you
am
oh,
sure, go
Annabelle,
ahead.
can you explain? Can you explain Title IX to the listeners? Some of them may not understand what that is.
Yeah, so Title IX being the protected status of women in education and sports specifically is how we have, you know, specifically seen it play out in this gender ideology war on sports specifically. You know, we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Title IX, actually, and just this past year in 2021, the Biden administration, Secretary of Education, revised the language of Title IX to include gender identity. And while that may seem small to some people, if you're keeping up with this, you know that that language, sexual orientation and gender identity, is being used as a term to allow men to displace women. And in this particular fight, it is in women's sports. And we're seeing it happen on a devastating level in high school, at college, and even up into like Olympic trials and all of that. So as a, you know, a total slap in the face to, if you want to talk about the progress of women in the 49th year since Title IX was passed, to change the definition from the protected status of women to include gender identity and thus open the door for men to displace women is devastating and really goes against everything that the Biden administration claims that they stand for and everything that feminists, liberal feminists would claim they stand for. So as women, we kind of stand here wondering where are all the feminists as we see boys literally take the place of girls in sports. And some people will say, well, it's just a competition. But, you know, it's not just a competition because when you're in high school competing in as an athlete, that impacts, if you're going to pursue that, impacts what school you get into. And then it impacts the scholarships for those schools. There are a lot of athletic scholarships. So when you have boys coming in, you know, who are, in some cases, they're competing on the men's team for 2 years or 3 years, and then they're not winning how they would like, and they start competing as a female and taking the top place. Well, now they're in their senior year of school. You've got girls who are working to pursue this at the collegiate level and for academic scholarships, athletic scholarships, excuse me, and they're literally being displaced by men. And so this is, of course, highly concerning to us because not only is that impacting them right now, but it's also just setting the standard for across the board. And we've already seen this displacement begin to spread to women's prisons and domestic violence, abuse shelters, and just this concerning element of men being able to replace women.
It's really outrageous, you know, when you see this swimmer, a male swimmer who was whatever you like, ranked 450th in his as a male, and he decides to be, oh, I'm a woman now, and now he's not just top 10. I mean, he's the best by 30 seconds, which in swimming is forever, you know. And the fact that, you know, the feminists, we're all the feminists. Have any feminists come out and spoke out against this, or are they all just going to keep their mouth shut?
Yes, actually, to their credit, this is actually a story that I absolutely love to share. As someone who works in the conservative movement, but more importantly, as a Christian, I love sharing this. There have been, actually, I don't know if you're familiar with an organization called WOLF, for short, or the Women's Liberation Front. They are a group of, they would self-describe themselves as radical feminists. Most of them are lesbians. And they have really taken up the torch in this fight. And we have had this amazing opportunity and a beautiful opportunity to reach across the aisle and link arms with this organization who thinks so differently than us on almost anything else.
Everything,
but what they do see on this issue is the importance of protecting biological sex. You know, they might have different views on sexual orientation, but they can see at least the logical progression of what their movement has fought for and how this is a complete regression of all of that progress. And so Penny Nance, our CEO and president, has written joint op-eds with them. We've been in working groups with them. We've published fact sheets with them on this issue, and it has been a really, you know, there are There are small, you have to look for the beautiful moments sometimes in Washington. And as tragic as the situation is around this, I really do believe that is one. And just the relationship that we've been able to build there of trust and rapport, and coming together on this issue to fight for, you know, the greater good across the board.
I don't know if you may know that the ACLU has actually wrote an amicus brief on our behalf. And in the brief, they said that we support Parisianism, we support that. So we disagree with, I think, everything they stand for. But in the end, they have the right to do that. And I guess it used to be that way in this country that, you know, I grew up in Boston. I mean, it was a Democrat left-wing Democrat stronghold. But you could disagree with your neighbor, but if you know if your car broke down or you needed to be shoveled out, they come over and help you. They didn't hate you. Today,
mm-hmm.
like the left, that not only do they disagree with you, that they want you canceled, they want you to boycott your business. You know, like what Joe Rogan's going through, it's just insane. And and I think it's winning people over, though. I think some people see this excess, and it's not a good thing. Overall. But I want to get back to your group. I was at the March for Life in 2020, in January, in D.C.
Okay.
With one of my youngest daughter and a friend of hers, one of our camp families. And I couldn't believe not only the number of people, I've never seen that many people in one place, but mostly young people. I mean, I think people like 30 and under, and it was
mm-hmm.
Catholics, Protestant, Jews, all kinds of people. It was a beautiful thing, and I never expected that was so many young people, you know, post Roe v. Wade, that were there. And I imagine your group was there. Of course, they had the march this year. I imagine your group was there.
Yeah, of course. So was that your first time at the March for Life then?
That was my first time. I've been to pro-life events in Boston over the years, and other, you know, different events over the years. But this is the first time I was at the march, and I bumped into a lot of people from Massachusetts, a large contingent from Massachusetts, you know. So
yeah, of course, we have been a part of the March for Life for years. You know, we started in 1979, so a little bit after, but we've been there since. We always love to support our friends at the March for Life, and as you said, it is truly astounding. And for anyone who hasn't been, I'd say it's definitely worth coming, although I will say it might look different in the years to come depending on the outcome of the Dobbs Supreme Court case. But it is such a beautiful gathering of, you know, over tens of thousands, over 100,000 people. And as you said, from all walks of life. I mean, you have people of all kinds of faith there, and then you have people who aren't of faith there. Of people who believe in the science of it and maybe don't even have any element of faith, but
right.
all coming together. And you said specifically so many young people, and I think that is an important note. And I think there's always been young people there. I mean, I can't really speak to before I was born, but I think the nature of that march is very family oriented, which is important. So I think it's always been that way. But I will say that I do believe that we're seeing a shift in the way young people respond to the issue of abortion and life when they're actually allowed the opportunity to see the facts. We're seeing a lot of, in my generation, I'm a young millennial, but we were known as being a very compassionate generation, not to say others aren't compassionate, but that was kind of a overarching characteristic, compassion, humanitarians, those things tended to define millennials, and I think there's been a real opportunity there, and I've seen a shift. And the terrible thing is that so many people, we think that people understand what abortion is, and it is shocking when you start having, I'm sure you've had these conversations with people, that sure, they know maybe the top level of what abortion is, but when you actually get into it and you start talking about it, and when they can understand what the procedure is, or when they see a picture of a baby in the womb at different stages of development, to see their mind shift, and how the left has really used basically the shutdown of information around human development to influence whole generations of young people. And I think, you know, with the internet and with the rise of the spread of information, there has been a shift in younger generations of people in understanding that this is a human being. And when they understand that it's a human being, their compassion kicks in. And I think that has created, and I'm hopeful that it will continue to create a shift in young people as they view abortion in life.
What's interesting is that the post-Roe v. It's your generation is the post-Roe v. Wade generation, and there's not as many of you because of Roe v. Wade and millions of babies that have been aborted all over the country, all over the world, but in this country. Have you seen the movie Roe v. Wade by any chance?
I actually have not, no.
Yeah, I recommend that because you mentioned the science of abortion. And the ultrasound was something that was relatively new. And I think the movie was Bernard Nathanson, who was the one of the
yes.
founding members of the National Association of Abortion, NARAL, N-A-R-A-L, Abortion
yes.
Rights. It was basically mostly his story, and then some of the Supreme Court behind the door dealings. But it was the ultrasound that really made the difference, and he actually had an emotional
yep.
breakdown, you know. And the movie's dear to me because I was a friend of the late Dr. Mildred Jefferson, is somebody that hopefully you get to know about her. She died in 2010, but she was one of the founders of one of the pioneers of the Right to Life movement, first black woman to graduate from Harvard Medical School. And I become friendly with the lady who depicted her in the movie, Stacey Dash. She's relocated up the Northeast, so I got a chance to meet her and befriend her.
Awesome.
My youngest daughter works for her now, so it's kind of cool
how
God puts people. Yeah, how God puts people together. Now you mentioned resources, and what type of resources, if people go to the website, what would you recommend if they want information? You said you have resources on the gender. I guess you get a lot. Critical race theory and
we definitely have a wealth of resources. And just before, I just wanted to, on the March for Life topic, and I mentioned briefly the Dobbs Supreme Court case. And for anyone that doesn't know, the Supreme Court heard a landmark case, oral arguments in a case, Dobbs v. Jackson, Whole Women's Health, on December 1st. And we actually had over 1,000 students that came from various states to be there on that day and rally for life. And we have a booklet of prayers, 30 days of prayers that our whole, our network across the country, grassroots, were praying the 30 days leading up to the oral arguments. And we're continuing to use that booklet to pray ahead of the decision, which will probably come down in June. And it was just, it has such large ramifications for things, even like the March for Life. You know, if the proper ruling is made on this case, it really undoes the foundation of Roe, which is based on this false idea of viability, and puts so much power back in the states. So I'll start there with that resource. If you go to concernedwomen.org, you can see our 7 core issues. You can see them listed plainly there. And if you go to our trending issues and go to Dobbs v. Jackson, Whole Women's Health, you can find our prayer booklet there, which we encourage you to download and use. There's still so much work to be done on our knees ahead of the decision, and we believe that the Lord is powerful, that He responds to our prayers, and that we should be praying first, and then put feet to those prayers and get up and educate and act on that. And so we invite anyone to join on that. You can also go to our post-Roe State of the States, at which we have a map listing all the current legislation or the state of legislation, the state of abortion law in each state, and kind of the work that needs to be done in order to create, you know, an ethic of life, of preserving the sanctity of life at each state level. And then you can kind of just dig in. We also have the Fight to Protect Women's Sports there and our trending issues. And on each of those pages, you'll find all the resources at your disposal, things we've written on, the different fact sheets that we've provided. And then if you go to youngwomenforamerica.com or .org, I'm sorry, you can also get through there through our main website. You can find information if you are a young woman from the ages of 16 to 26 and you're looking to find people who to kind of battle buddies to do life with you, who are conservative, who are Christian and want to fight for these biblical principles and conservative values in your community or on your campuses. We'd love to get you plugged in with Young Women for America and plugged into that network of support.
Do you have any overseas groups or just strictly in the United States?
So we do work on international policy. We have a VP of International Affairs. We've done a lot of work with the UN in the in past years and now today. But we do not have groups in other countries, although we have done work with people in other countries. Right now, we're just in the United States, and that's kind of where we focus and where we have the ability to impact policy here. We do have a leader in our territory of Puerto Rico, which we think is awesome. She's a new leader, and I'm sure you know, as you said, there's different marches for life at the state level and in various states, and she was marching in spirit at the Puerto Rico March for Life with her Young Women for America shirt and attire, and we love that. So right now, yes, here in the United States, we're in 37 states and also Puerto Rico for Young Women for America. And then CWA is, of course, across the states working on federal legislation and then, of course, state and local legislation as well.
I want to touch on one of the core topics your group promotes is sovereignty, national sovereignty.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And
yes, that
I'm
is
glad
correct.
To see that. I'm very glad to see that because a lot of people don't see that as an issue, but as you get Supreme Court justices looking at foreign law to make based on their case, very dangerous precedent, and the notion of open borders, if you don't have a border, you quite frankly don't have a country. If you can't control your borders, and I think it's biblical too. I mean, people will say, "Oh, you're not a good Christian if you should be welcoming everybody in." We should be welcoming some people in, and some people not. And so, talk a little bit about what you're doing on that subject.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the idea of national sovereignty is so important because as it pertains to the seven issues that we work on. Nothing matters no work that we can do in our country, us or any organization matters if the international community can supersede any laws that we've decided are wise in our own nation. And so at the very most basic foundation, we have to have the ability to decide for our country what is right for our country. We want that to be respected by other nations, and we want to respect that in other nations as well. And of course, there are times for the international community to step in or put pressure, whatever it may be. But, something that we specifically have focused on throughout the years, the encroachment of Sharia law. We mm-hmm. stand solidly and support the nation of Israel and also just the idea of no one faith. And you can't have a faith that supersedes or oversteps anything that's in the Constitution. And so that's an issue. Also the issue, like you said, international courts or our Supreme Court using international law or other laws in their decisions is a huge concern of ours. And something else that we believe falls under the national sovereignty issue is sovereignty over our elections. And right now we're fighting a huge fight for election integrity, and we've had to fight, for the for saving our electoral college even and really used that issue to help educate on so many things that people might not realize are undermining our ability to sovereignly govern this nation and the ways that the international community can undermine that and supersede that might not be as blatant even as an immigration issue, but there really are so many little ways that our national sovereignty can be undermined, and once you let go of it, it's so hard to get back.
Okay, we're just about out of time. Can you let listeners know how they can reach you or your organization?
Yeah, well, the first way would be to go to concernedwomen.org. That would be the best way. You can also go to youngwomenforamerica.org. And specifically, if you are interested in Young Women for America, the best place, honestly, for people to get a picture, and we find so many of our leaders through social media, and we want to use that for good. Sometimes it's used for evil, and we want to use it for good. And so that is YW4A on Instagram. And that really is the way that so many people can kind of get a great snapshot of who we are. So those would be the three primary ways.
All right, well, folks, you've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff, and my guest, Annabelle Rutledge. And until next week, may God richly bless you.
As a doctor, you know your practice has been changing. You're spending less time with patients and more time filling out forms. At Castle Connolly Private Health Partners, we're helping doctors convert to a different kind of concierge practice. With ours, you maintain your independence and keep your patients. Plus, you'll have Castle Connolly's support and expertise. You didn't spend 14 years getting a degree in paperwork. Welcome back to all the reasons you wanted to be a doctor. Visit ccphp.net/physicians.